clean spikes. Hooked chains dangled from the ceiling, many of them ripe with stinking fruit in the form of inhuman bodies hanging without limbs or skin.
Have you ever set foot on a Nightfall?
Angron could barely reply. Racking twitches pulled his features tight and forced his fingers to gun the triggers of his chain axes in muscular spasms.
No. Never been on the 8th Legion flagship.
Lorgar's lip curled.
This looks like Gurz's bedchamber.
The World Eater crashed his axes together.
Let this be done, brother.
As you wish.
The Primarchs raised their weapons and charged as one. First, the white-masked wielders of slave swords. Angron sawed his path through them, while Lorgar hammered them aside with his maul or sent them reeling with bursts of psychic fire. For the first time in either of their lives, the two brothers fought in unity. Angron turned, disemboweling a dark armored bladesman seeking to attack Lorgar from behind. In turn, the bearer of the word protected his blood-spattered kin, deflecting an Eldar's thrust with his maul's head and killing the warrior on the backswing. The union was effort to control and maintain, for it didn't come naturally to either of them. But they held it until only one other soul remained alive on the bridge.
Any last words?
The ship shook around them with greater force now. The Ursa's claws had bitten too deep. The Conqueror was pulling its prey apart purely by the strength of its grip. Angron staggered to his brother's side, drooling and dizzy, a flawed statue of the perfect warrior, ruined by mistreatment. As bloodstained as they both were, they could almost have been twins. The alien prince was a thing clad in baroque, ceremonial armor, a creature of angelically consumptive features and the foul stench of impure blood beneath oiled skin. The Eldar Lord's final words hissed into the air, spat from pale lips.
Two monkey god princes? There was only supposed to be one. The one to become the blood god's son. The pain engines bend the soul to the eightfold path. That path leads to the skull throne.
Lorgar's focus drifted to Angron as the possibilities played out behind his soothing eyes.
The blood god's son. It cannot be.
Angron raised his axes. The raider didn't move a muscle. Lorgar reached for Angron's shoulder.
Wait. He said...
But the axes fell, and the alien captain's head rolled free. Three days later, the Conqueror limped back to its fleet. While its hull had sustained extensive damage, most of it was superficial. The real losses had been in terms of crew. Fully half the indentured serfs and trained mortal crew were dead. On a ship of such grand size, the several thousand that remained alive were almost counted a skeleton crew. Of the 3,000 warriors Angron took with him aboard his flagship, barely a third had returned. The Eldar reaped a bloody toll in their defeat, and the 12th Legion's funerary rites lasted day and night while the ship sailed back to its kindred. The airlocks opened and closed, silent maws yawning into the void, exhaling the shrouded bodies of slain World Eaters and crew. Lorgar made ready to depart the Conqueror and bid farewell to his brother on the embarkation deck.
It was good to purge some of the bad blood between us.
To his credit, he managed to keep his rebellious muscles from twitching, no matter how the butcher's nails stabbed at his nervous system.
For now, let neither of us pretend it will last forever.
Angron wiped his bleeding nose on the back of his hand.
You said something on the enemy ship. Something about the nails?
Lorgar thought for a moment.
I do not recall.
I do. You said the implants were killing me.
Lorgar shook his head, offering his kindest, most sincere smile. In his mind, he heard the Eldar Reaver's words once more.
The one to become the Blood God's son. The pain engines bend the soul to the eightfold path. That path leads to the Skull Throne.
I was wrong, and my concern was foolish. You have survived this long. You will endure into the future.
You are lying to me, Lorga.
For once, Angron, I am not. Your butcher's nails will never kill you. I am certain of that. If I could ease some of the pain you must be suffering, then I would. But they cannot be removed, and tampering with them is likely to kill you just as quickly as removing them. They are as much a part of you now as the weapons you wield and the scars you carry.
If you're not lying, you are at least hiding something.
Lorgar smiled, deceitless in his regret.
I am hiding many things. We will speak of them in time. They are not secrets, merely truths that cannot bloom until the moment is right. And the pieces of this great puzzle begin to fall into place. There is much I do not yet understand myself.
The World Eater's Primarch bared his teeth in a metallic smile. It contained nothing of warmth.
Back to your ship then, Crusader. It was a pleasure to shed blood with you while it lasted.
Lorgar nodded, not looking back over his shoulder as he ascended the ramp into his gunship.
Farewell, brother.
Angron watched the gunship leave the embarkation deck and streak away towards the Fidelitas Lex.
Khan.
The equerry moved forward from his master's honor guard, who stood silently in their hulking Terminator armor.
Yes.
Lorgar has changed, yet he still keeps his secrets beneath a forked tongue. What is the name of the word-bearer you duel with?
Argel Tal, the seventh captain.
You have known him long, yes?
Decades. We fought together in three compliances. Why do you ask?
The Primarch didn't answer at once. He reached back to scratch the back of his head. The flesh felt raw, swollen. The headache was worse than usual, coming to a crest. He could feel a trickle of blood worming a warm trail down his neck, running from his ear.
We have many months of difficult unity with the word bearers ahead of us. Remain vigilant, Khan. That is all I ask.
The two warriors dueled the very next night. The sons of the Crusader and the Gladiator facing each other in the pit, chain axe against power sword. Argel Tal's crimson warplate was undecorated, missing the scrolls of faith and devotion he wore in battle. Khan's white ceramite was similarly unadorned, but for the chains binding his weapons to his arms. Both warriors ignored the cheers and cries of their comrades at the pit's edge. Helmetless, they dueled in the sand, blade cracking against blade. When their weapons locked again, the two warriors squared against each other, boots grinding back through the sand as they sought leverage. Their faces were inches apart, breathing acid, stinking breath as they struggled to break the deadlock. Argel Tal's voice betrayed a curious duality, his twin souls speaking through one mouth.
You're slow tonight, Khan. What steals your attention?
The World Eater redoubled his efforts, muscles straining to throw his enemy back. Argel Tal responded in kind, ichor forming stalactites along his upper teeth.
Not slow. Difficult to fight. Two of you.
Argel Tal gave a toothy grin. As he drew breath to speak, it was all the edge Khan needed. The World Eater leaned into a turn, letting his adversary overbalance. The revving chain axe howled through the air, only to crash against the Wordbearer's golden sword edge yet again.
Not slow!
He chuckled breathlessly, showing his exhaustion as plainly as Khan showed his own.
But not fast enough!
The accursed implant sent a bolt of jagged pain sawing down the World Eater's spine. Khan felt one eye flicker and his left arm spasm in ungainly response. The butcher's nails were threatening to take hold now. He disengaged, backing away with his axe raised, taking a moment to spit out the acidic saliva brewing beneath his tongue. Chains rattled against his armor as he came on guard. The chains were a personal tradition, spread even among the other legions after their popularity had escaped beyond the fighting pits of the World Eaters. Sigismund, first captain of the Imperial Fists, had taken to the custom with his usual zeal, binding his knightly weapons to his wrists on dense black chains. He'd made an impressive name for himself here in the bowels of the Conqueror, dueling with the 12th Legion's finest warriors late in the Great Crusade. The Black Knight, they called him, in honor of his prowess, his nobility, and his personal heraldry. The Flesh Tearer was another to earn great glory in the World Eater's pits. Amit, a captain of the Blood Angels who'd fought with the same savagery and brutality as his hosts. Before Istvan, Khan had counted them both among his oath brothers. When the time came to lay siege to Terra and bring the palace walls tumbling down, he would regret slaying those two warriors above all others. Argo Tau growled.
Malkas! You're drifting and your skill fades with your attention!
Khan disengaged with a twist of his axe blade and attacked in a series of vicious howling cuts. Argo Tau wove back, dodging rather than risk missing a block. The word-bearer caught the last strike on his sword's edge and locked Khan in place again. Both warriors stood unmoving as they pushed against one another with equal force.
The war to come, does it not feel ignoble to you? Dishonorable?
Honor? I don't care about honor, cousin. I care about the truth, and I care about victory.
Khan drew breath to reply, just as the chamber's vox crackled live.
Captain Khan? Captain Argo Tau?
Both warriors froze. Argo Tau's stillness was born of inhuman control over his body. Khan was motionless, but not entirely still. He trembled with ticks from the butcher's nails cooling in the back of his skull.
What is it, Lotara?
We're receiving word from the fleet. Lord Aurelian is sending a mass pulse from all word-bearers' vessels focused by the Lex. Corferan's armada has just launched its assault on Kelk.
She paused, taking a breath.
The war in Ultramar has begun.
Khan deactivated his axe and stood in silence. Argo Tau chuckled, a threatening lion's purr in his demonic twin chorus.
It is time, cousin.
Khan smiled, though the expression held nothing of amusement. The butcher's nails still hummed in the meat of his mind, flicking out their pulses of pain and irrational anger.
Now the Shadow Crusade begins while Kalth burns.
Raven's Flight by Gav Thorpe, performed by Toby Longworth. A blood-stained hurricane swept across a desolate hillside, its furious roar 100,000 throats crying out in anger and agony. Crimson winds turned to a raging inferno, setting all ablaze. The sky burned, and a multitude of dark shapes flocked into the air, their wings alight, sparks trailing from their dark feathers. Dying shouts became the cawing of ravens, a rising cacophony that drowned out the wail of the storm. Sweat-soaked, heart hammering, Marcus Valerius broke from his torment with a scream stifled on his lips. Blood and fire, always the same, fire and blood. He pulled aside the sodden blanket, the recycled air of deliverance drying his lips, crusting the salt on his brow. Valerius rubbed at his eyes as dim raven shapes danced in the shadows of his gloomy quarters. A faint echo of that desperate roaring rebounded from the bare metal walls, taunting him. Trembling, Valerius pushed himself from his bed and fumbled his way into the shower alcove. He pulled the brass-ringed chain and tepid water flowed over him, washing away his fatigue. He quickly scrubbed at his flesh with a rough flannel and massaged the water into his curled brown hair. Like most things on Deliverance, water was closely rationed. After his allotted 45 seconds, the stream stopped. Valerius flirted with the idea of using his second daily allotment, but dismissed the notion. After a day in the stifling air of Deliverance's artificial habitat, his evening shower was essential in washing away the filth of the day. It was impossible for him to sleep without it. Not that sleep had come so easy these past days. Every night for 7 nights the dream had tortured him. Blood and fire, fire and blood, and a host of ravens crying out in pain. Still occupied by these disturbing thoughts, Valerius rubbed a hand across his narrow chin, feeling stubble on his fingertips. He took a deep bowl and filled it from the wastewater of the shower, placing it on a shelf beneath the small mirror fixed to the wall. He looked at his red-rimmed eyes and the lines on his young cheeks. It did not look like the face of a man not long past 30. The past 7 days had taken more of a toll than 14 years of fighting, first against the orcs on Therion, and then as part of the great army of the Emperor, alongside the Astartes of the Raven Guard Legion. He had slept more easily on a dropship as it crashed down towards a world that had refused enlightenment. He had spent nights in fetid swamps in more comfort than he had found in his own bed of late. Valerius dropped his straight razor and drew it carefully down his cheeks, calmed by the motion. He paid particular attention to his thin moustache, trimming just above his top lip. He took pride in his facial hair, a testament to his upbringing on Therion, and as much a badge of his position as Praefector in the Imperial Army as any rank insignia. Having performed his morning ablutions, Valerius called for his page, Palon. The young man came in with his master's uniform. Palon helped Valerius to dress, a well-ordered dance between master and servant. The page smoothed out creases in the silk shirt and tied golden braids into the praefector's shoulder-length hair. Palon broke the usual silence.
"You look tired, my master. Are the dreams still disturbing you?" "What do you know of my dreams?" "Only that I hear you whispering and calling out in your sleep, my master."
Palon held out Valerius's knee-length breeches while the officer stepped into them, fastening them with thick black laces.
"Depending on the warp tides, Lord Korax and his Astartes would have arrived at Istvan 7 days ago. Can it simply be coincidence that my dream started then?"
The manservant did not reply as Valerius sat on the end of his bed and held up his feet. Palon pushed on the Praefector's traditional Therion riding boots.
"Perhaps it is a message, my master. Some of the old tales say that we can be sent omens in dreams."
"Mere superstition. A message from who? How would it get into my dreams?"
Palon shrugged while Valerius rose. The Imperial officer held out his arms so that his manservant could wind a red sash about his waist and over his left shoulder, the tasseled tail hanging down his right leg.
"Lord Korax is not a normal human. Who can say what he can and cannot do, my master?"
Valerius thought about this as he hung a belt around his waist, dress sword in an ornate scabbard on his left hip. He remained silent as Palon helped him with the black half-cloak, trimmed with scarlet viamin fur, affixing it over the Praefector's right shoulder. It was a ritual that had once given Valerius great comfort. No matter what happened, what life threw at him, he was restored, created anew as an officer of the Emperor. Today the ceremony was empty, as it had been for the last 7 days. It brought no comfort as the screams of the ravens lingered on the edge of his hearing and flames flickered behind his eyes. All the fine Therion tradition and all of its panoply of the Imperial army did nothing to assuage his fears. His role, his duty, only increased Valerius's anxiety. An impulse at the core of his being told the Praefector that something was amiss in the universe, and that, as an officer of the Emperor, he was honor-bound to act.
I wanted to travel with the Astartes. I spoke with Lord Korax before he departed. He told me that this matter was for the Astartes alone to deal with. It is a terrible time, Palon. I could hardly bring myself to believe it. Part of me still hopes that it is not true. An Astartes Primarch turning renegade, throwing aside his oaths to the Emperor? I would sooner believe that gravity was a myth. I saw the intensity of the Primarch's eyes. They burned with something I have never seen before. Warmaster Horus's rebellion stains the honor of all Astartes. Lord Korax swore to me that the Space Marines would put this right without our help. Then he laid his hand on my shoulder and said, "If I need you, you will hear my call." What do you suppose that meant?
I could not guess, my master.
Though it was clear Palon had made some connection with the dream, Valerius let it pass. Valerius headed out into the meandering tunnels of the old mines, Palon by his side. Little could be seen of the grim origins of the labyrinth, the plasteel-clad walls obscuring the marks of laser pick and rock drill. Millions had labored and died to fuel the greed of a few, but nothing remained of their passing. Lycaeus was no more. Valerius knew of it only from the old stories of tyranny and misery passed on to him by the Astartes of the Raven Guard, those that had been enslaved here and had joined the Legion after the Emperor's arrival. Now the moon was called Deliverance, its rock creek pinnacles and winding corridors a testament to the benefits of enlightenment and the determination of Lord Korax. Valerius barely thought about the bloody past of this place, but now and then he remembered that the air he breathed was the same air that those indentured, pitiful creatures had once breathed, before Lord Korax had led them to freedom. The pair climbed several flights of stairs towards a shuttle pad and came to a viewing gallery, a hemisphere of armorplast where once the slave masters had looked into the black skies and seen the fiery trails of the transports bringing their human cargo from the planet below. That world, Kievar, could not be seen at the moment, but sometimes it loomed large on the horizon like a resentful eye. Valerius's own eye was drawn to his destination, the towering needle known as the Ravenspire, former guard tower and now fortress of the Astartes. Its sheer sides were blistered with weapon bays and punctured by the light-filled maws of its docks. 100 searchlights cut across the abyssal blackness of the airless world, fixed upon the mine workings that sprawled across the moon's cratered surface, glittering from force domes that protected worker tenements and mineral refineries. The Ravenspire was quiet. All but a few hundred of the Astartes had left, following their Primarch, Lord Korax, to the Istvan system. Valerius did not know the details. Few, if any, did. It was this that so vexed the Praefector. The dreams might somehow be a call for help from the Primarch. How this could be so, Valerius did not know. All he had was a resounding conviction that he was needed at Istvan, and that he should go there to whatever fate awaited him. Commander Bran, leader of the Raven Guard, still stationed on Deliverance, held his chambers high in the tower. He was alone as the Praefector and his companion entered, looking out through a narrow window into the starry sky.
The Astartes commander was dressed in a simple black tabard embroidered with the sigil of his legion. He turned and smiled as Valerius entered, waving him to a couch along one wall of the low-ceilinged room. Bran sat next to him, the sofa creaking alarmingly under his weight. Even sitting down, the Space Marine dominated the room with his physical presence. His bare biceps were the size of Valerius's thighs, his massive chest stretching the fabric of the tabard almost to tearing. The Praefector felt like a toddling child. It was even worse when confronted by Lord Korax, who made even the Astartes appear small and frail. Valerius gulped back a moment of nervousness.
"Is all well, Commander?"
Bran's expression was wistful.
"This used to be a guardroom. I killed my first man here when I was younger than your manservant. Throttled him with the strap of his rifle and took his gun. Of course, Korax was with me then. I saw him rip out a man's heart with his hand and crush the skull of another with his fist."
He looked around the room, seeing memories rather than cold, plasteel walls.
"I wish I had gone with the rest of the Legion."
"Why didn't you?"
"Luck of the draw. Somebody had to stay behind and watch the fortress. The commanders had a lottery and I lost, so here I am, missing out on the action. Perhaps not."
Valerius sensed an opening.
"I don't understand."
Bran looked up as Palon appeared with a tray carrying two goblets. He shook his head, but Valerius took the prophet water. It had a chemical aftertaste, not at all like the fresh running streams of his estate on Therion. Still, he drank swiftly to remove the dryness that had nagged him since waking. The Praefector realized he was stalling, not wishing to explain himself. His words came in a rush, breaking through the dam of embarrassment that held them back.
"I think that Lord Korax needs our help. On Istvan, I mean. I fear that all has not gone well with the fight against Horus."
Bran frowned.
"What makes you think anything is amiss? Have you heard some word I haven't?" "Not directly, no. Look, this is probably not going to make much sense. I don't really understand it myself. I keep having a dream of burning ravens."
The furrows in Bran's brow deepened, but Valerius plunged on.
"It might be nothing, nothing at all, but it has plagued me for 7 days now. I fear that it is some kind of warning. I cannot explain it well. It is something that I just feel. All is not well at Istvan."
Bran's confusion became skepticism.
"A dream? You want me to ship out to Istvan against the Primarch's orders because of a dream?"
"More than a dream. I'm sure of it."
"You are worrying about nothing. Three legions, three whole legions move against Horus. Four more will follow up their offensive. No matter what those traitors have done so far, they haven't the strength to contend against that. What force in the galaxy could Horus possess to fight such an army?"
"Perhaps you are right," Valerius conceded, though part of him was not convinced.
"Maybe if I took my men there, just to be sure. If all is well, we can simply return, a few weeks lost and nothing more." "I am right. Nobody is leaving Deliverance, least of all your Imperial soldiers. This is Astartes' business. We look to our own, and we will deal with our own. You must be ready for Lord Korax's return. We'll be in the warp and heading off to some other world soon enough if you're thirsty for action."
Valerius nodded, suppressing a sigh. In the face of such a blank refusal, there was nothing else he could do. Peace. A rhythmic hum muffled through artificial amniotic fluid. A calming voice, similarly distorted. The words are lost, but the tone is comforting. Something beeps insistently in the background. A pale face appears, blurred through the incubator. The features are indistinct, the expression indiscernible. A hand is laid upon the glass of the pod. Reverent. Hopeful. Nurturing. Even loving, perhaps?
Fire and blood crashed through the piece. Fire from the burning engines of the Thunderhawk gunship. Blood from the tears in his armor, rapidly thickening to stem the flow. There was no pain,
No physical pain, at least. The psychological pain, the horror of betrayal, burned like an open wound in his thoughts. Most of the crimson drying on his black armor was not his own. Pieces of shrapnel protruded from its ceramide skin, shards of armor from his bodyguard. Grisly lumps of flesh clogged the joints, slivers of bone trapped in strands of sinew and gobbets of muscle. He didn't know the names of those that now stained his armor. He didn't want to know. Korax pushed himself from the wreckage of the gunship, steadying himself with the aid of Commander Agapito.
You should have that wound seen to, Lord Korax.
It is nothing.
That same blast killed 5 Astartes. I would not dismiss such a thing so lightly.
My body recovers. We have far more pressing concerns. Commander Agapito knew exactly what his Primarch meant.
Casualty estimates are sketchy.
Tell me. Agapito shook his head in disbelief as he relayed the casualty figures.
Rough estimate is that 75% of the Legion has already been lost. Losses may be as high as 90%, Lord.
Korax groaned, hurt more by this news than the gouge in his flesh. Give me a moment. He turned away from the Space Marines as they alighted from the downed Thunderhawk. Many kilometers to the west, the Primarch could see the fires burning on the Urgal Plateau and the ring of hills around it. Tens of thousands of Astartes lay dead there. Tens of thousands of Raven Guard. Korax had never been afraid of anything in his life. Not the whips of the slavers, not hordes of orcs or armies of dissidents. This was something different. This was Astartes killing Astartes. This was the birth of mankind destroying itself. Korax allowed himself a few moments of grief, to ponder the lives lost, the fallen brothers in arms cut down by their traitorous brethren. He watched the smoke billowing into the sky, blanketing the horizon. He remembered the hasty exchange with Vulcan as the traitors had opened fire. The Primarch of the Salamanders had wanted to protect the drop site. Korax had argued otherwise, knowing that the field was already lost. It was not in his nature to stay in one place and allow himself to be cut down. With Vulcan's curses ringing in his ears, Korax had ordered his legion to retreat by any means necessary. Emergency rendezvous points had been broadcast over the comnet, coded, but Korax wondered if the traitors had access to the Raven Guard's communication ciphers. When the survivors had regathered their strength, the Primarch would have the Tech Marines establish new security protocols. In this way, with regret giving way to immediate need, Korax pushed aside the empty gulf that threatened to swallow him. As his mind filled with dispositions and orders, he turned back to the remnants of his honor guard. A Tech Marine, Straden, fussed over a tangled mess of ceramide casing and steel feathers. Straden looked up as Korax returned. The Tech Marine's helmeted head cocked to one side in dismay as he looked to repair the Primarch's damaged flight pack.
Leave it.
Korax cast his gaze over the Space Marines, looking expectantly at their Primarch.
It will be some time before this Raven flies again.
The valley was filled with a deep mist, but there was darker smog amongst the haze. The smoke of engines. Korax was crouched at an observation point high on the western side of the gorge, his 4 commanders with him. The Primarch had removed his winged helmet and listened intently, his superhuman ears better than any auto-sense the Technorati could yet devise. He could tell every vehicle by its unique timbre of roar and grind of gears. Rhino transports, land raiders, predator tanks, thunderstrike assault guns. This last told him who it was that advanced up the valley, for any one legion employed artillery of that fashion.
Iron Warriors.
There were growls of disgust from the officers around him. Of those that had turned traitor, the Iron Warriors were reserved for especial hatred. The Raven Guard had always considered them brutal, simplistic in their tactics. Korax had never voiced his doubts openly, but he had not shared Perturabo's approach to war. His former brother viewed conflict as a simple matter of exchanging punishment until one side capitulated. He was the sort that would stand face to face with a foe and trade blows, relying on obstinacy to prevail.
More than once, Perturabo had hinted he thought Korax cowardly for his preferred strategy of hit and run. Korax cared little for the criticisms of the other Primarchs. Their legions were larger than his, their Terran forces bolstered by populous home planets. Deliverance lacked the vast resources of many other worlds, and only a few thousand more Astartes had swelled the ranks of the Raven Guard. Such a situation had necessitated a certain approach to war, one that Korax had learnt well when he had led the uprising against the slave masters. Though it was the Raven Guard who had become the superior armed force, Korax had never forgotten the hard-learnt lessons of that guerrilla war. Had he done as Perturabo believed, or as Vulcan had decided, his warriors would all be dead. Through careful withdrawal under fire, some had escaped to rejoin the Primarch. His 4,000 Astartes were little compared to the might he had commanded only a dozen days earlier, but they were still space marines, and they could still fight. Korax was determined that the dropside massacre would not go unanswered. Perturabo's warriors would learn that sometimes the concealed blow was the most lethal. Korax listened intently to the mechanical noises echoing along the valley, pinpointing each source.
14 rhinos, 3 land raiders, 6 predators, 3 thunderstrikes.
None doubted his word, his eyes and ears more accurate than any scanner they had remaining in their armory.
Advancing in double column, 6 transports in the vanguard, half a kilometer ahead, 2 outriding squadrons of bikes, 20 in total.
The Primarch looked up. The cloud in the highlands was low. He heard no jets. It was unlikely that the Iron Warriors had aerial forces. They would be virtually useless in this weather. Further up, beyond the atmosphere, their frigates and battle barges peered down upon Istvan V with their long-range augers, but finding a force as small as Korax's would be all but impossible. It was a gamble, but Korax had to hope that the recon column, one of 3 that had been scouring the hills since the massacre, did not have orbital support.
When we attack, they will assume an arrow point defensive stance. Land raiders to the fore, predators along the flanks, assault guns and transports as reserve. That is just the sort of fight these bastards like. Let's not give them that.
Diversionary delayed attack, Lord,
suggested Agapito, commander of the Talons, the tactical companies that form the fighting backbone of the newly reorganized Raven Guard. Korax nodded. He turned to Commander Alani, freshly appointed leader of the assault companies, the Falcons.
Agapito will set up a base of fire in the eastern head of the valley. Give the Iron Warriors 10 minutes to assemble their formation before attacking the rear. Agapito, I need you to draw their attention to you as much as possible. Hit them hard and hold your ground. Retaliation will be intense. You have to take it. If the enemy think you are going to fall back, they will form up for pursuit, which will leave a rear guard right in front of Alani's companies. Don't allow that to happen.
The commanders nodded their understanding.
What about the outriders, Lord?
Solero can use bike squads to give them something to chase. Draw them to the west. Alani, slant your attack from the east.
There were affirmatives from the officers, followed by a moment's quiet until Agapito spoke up.
And you, Lord? Where will you be fighting?
I'll attack from the southeast, as the second wing of the delayed attack.
Is that wise? You disbanded your bodyguard into the other companies.
Korax stood up to his full height and unslung his heavy bolter, holding it easily in his left hand. The towering Primarch smiled down at his officers.
That was for appearance. Do you think I actually need a bodyguard?
The valley was alight with heavy weapons fire and bolter rounds. 2 rhinos were smoldering wrecks, and a land raider burned fiercely from its engine compartment. The traitor's return fire was intense, a stream of shells and blasts that seared away the concealing mists. Detonations racked the boulder-strewn hillside where Agapito's talons poured fire onto the Iron Warriors. Korax watched the exchange from a narrow opening a few hundred meters behind the Iron Warriors' positions. He saw the crews of the Thunderstrikes readying their guns and knew it was time to act. He had expected as much, but hadn't wanted Alani to attack too soon for fear of revealing the strategy. Korax felt no remorse at deceiving his own commanders. It was for their survival that the Primarch had decided against them attacking early. He could handle this situation on his own. The Primarch broke from cover, pounding across the pebble-strewn hillside with long strides. Surprise would be his first weapon. As the gravel sprayed underfoot, a lone iron warrior, his silver armor dappled with water droplets, turned towards Korax, somehow hearing the crunching footfalls over the din of the battle. The Primarch acted without hesitation. Stooping in his run, he snatched up a shard of rock. With a flick of his arm, he hurled the stone at the iron warrior. As a dark blur, it struck the Space Marine in the throat and erupted from the back of his neck, silently felling him. Korax sprinted onwards, readying his heavy bolter. The thunderstrikes opened up on the Raven Guard, three enormous blossoms of fire enveloping the hillside. Korax could not spare a glance at the devastation. He was utterly focused on his targets. 50 meters behind the assault guns, he stopped and took up a firing position, bringing the heavy bolter up to his left shoulder as an ordinary man might heft a rifle. He sighted on the closest thunderstrike, eyes narrow. He aimed at a point just above the armored maintenance hatch in the vehicle's flank, beyond which sat the primary engine relays. The first roaring salvo of bolts hit the exact mark, ripping through the armor plates. A moment later, smoke was billowing from the Thunderstrike's engines before a ball of fire engulfed the assault gun, sending torn pieces of metal flying in all directions. Korax had no time to admire his handiwork. His next fusillade tore into the armor of the second Thunderstrike's gun mounting, smashing gears, jamming the cannon in place. Silver shapes spilled from the rhinos and ran towards Korax, but he ignored them. He primed three crack grenades, easily holding all of them in the palm of his hand. With an overhand toss, he lobbed the grenades onto the engine vents of the third Thunderstrike, shattering the grill and rupturing fuel lines. Soon, the vehicle was ablaze along the left side of its hull. As the crew emerged smoldering from the hatches, Korax gunned them down with raking fire. Bolter rounds were pattering from Korax's armor, nothing more than a distraction. Taking in everything at a glance, the Primarch turned his attention to a Predator tank slewing in his direction. Its las cannon sponsons swiveled towards Korax. Twin blasts of energy exploded around the Primarch, hurling him to his back, his chest plastron a semi-molten slurry, the heavy bolter a mangled ruin in his hand. Pain flared across his chest, but disappeared as quickly as it came. Korax tossed the heavy bolter aside and pulled himself to his feet as the Predator's turret opened fire, autocannon rounds shrieking past the Primarch. He broke into a loping run, shells ringing from his helmet and shoulder pads as he sprinted into the teeth of the metal storm. He cared nothing for the danger, except to embrace it. This was what he had been created to do, and joy sang in his veins. Korax was further fueled by a righteousness of purpose. He looked at the Iron Warriors and saw only cowardly bullies revealed in their true nature. The Primarch had been raised fighting such tyrants. To find them within the ranks of the Astartes appalled him in a way that nothing else ever had. The slave masters of Lycaeus had been human. They had been fallible. The Astartes had no such excuse. They had been chosen for their strength of body and purpose. They had sworn binding oaths of service to the Emperor and the growing Imperium of mankind. They were liberators, not oppressors. With a feral roar, Korax leapt upon the Predator. Driven by his indignant rage, he drove his fist through the driver's slit, crushing the skull of the Iron Warrior within. Jumping onto the turret, the Primarch tore away the hatch covers, sending their jagged remains scything through the Iron Warrior squads advancing on him from the transports. The tank's commander looked up in surprise as light flooded the interior of the Predator. Korax reached in, his gauntlet enveloping the Space Marine's head. The helmet resisted for a moment before giving in to the titanic pressure, the skull collapsing between Korax's fingers.
dropping to the ground, the Primarch grabbed one of the las cannons and braced a foot against the tank's hull. With a heave of his shoulders, Korax tore the mounting free. The gunner within dragged halfway out of the hull. Korax brought his fist down onto the Iron Warrior's back, the force of the blow cracking his armor and shattering his spine. The bolter fire was becoming too intense to ignore. Like a rain shower that suddenly becomes a hailstorm, it had grown in vehemence. Four squads of Iron Warriors poured their fire at the Primarch, muzzle flares gleaming from their armor. The Primarch hurled the remains of the Predator Sponson through them, crushing three Space Marines. The smoking trail of a missile cut through the air a moment before it crashed into Korax's left shoulder, sending shards of ceramite in all directions, knocking the Primarch to one knee. He spat a wordless curse as he surged forwards once more, ducking to the left and right as balls of plasma and more rockets screamed around him. Korax covered the distance quickly, coming at the nearest squad from their flank. His fists buckled the faceplates of the first two Space Marines. As their bodies slumped, the Primarch snatched up their weapons and stormed into the rest of the squad, a blazing bolter in each hand. The bolts hammered into the Iron Warriors. Half a dozen more were left on the ground before the ammunition belts were exhausted. Korax tossed the weapons aside. The squad sergeant leapt at Korax, a screeching chainsword in his right hand, bolt pistol blazing in the left. The Primarch swatted away the whirring teeth of the chainsword and grabbed the sergeant's elbow. With a twist and a wrench, he tore out the Iron Warrior's arm and swung it around, the razor-sharp blades of the chainsword biting deep into the sergeant's helm. Korax threw the bloody limb aside and grabbed a grenade from the fallen sergeant's belt, slamming his fist into the chest of another Space Marine, the explosive detonating in his grasp. Korax heard the whine of hydraulics to his right as he shook his numbed fingers. A land raider opened its assault ramp. Silhouetted against the ruddy light within, a squad of bulky Terminators advanced with purpose. They did not waste the ammunition of their combi bolters, but came forward quickly, flexing lightning-enveloped claws. More detonations and bolter fire rocked the Iron Warriors' column as the Falcons attacked, Alani's companies descending on the traitors with jump packs flaring. The Talons pushed forward from the valley ahead, las cannons and missile launchers cutting trails of death through the surrounded Iron Warriors. The Terminators hesitated in their advance as anarchy ensued around them. Korax reached behind him and pulled a fresh weapon from his belt. A long, twin-barbed whip uncoiled in his hands, writhing with a life of its own. The Primarch had requested the Mechanicum of Mars to fashion the lash for him. The irony of wielding such a tyrant's weapon in a noble cause pleased Korax. Inside his helmet, the Primarch grinned in anticipation. Flickers of energy sparking along its length. The whip flicked out in Korax's hand and caught the closest Terminator with a thunderous crack, slicing him from shoulder to waist. His remains fell to the ground in three, wisps of smoke drifting from the neatly sliced body parts. The Terminators opened fire, but it was too late. Korax's whip slashed the head from another and cut the legs from under a third. Alani bounded past in his ebon armor, his plasma pistol spitting incandescent blasts. Korax felt a surge of exultation and raised the whip above his head. No mercy! The Raven Guard picked the dead clean of everything that could be taken. They worked their way amongst the fallen, slaying those traitors that still lived, whilst the apothecaries did what they could to attend the loyalist wounded. Weapons were ripped from dead grasps, and ammunition taken from the belts and packs of the fallen. It was with some distaste that Korax had ordered such plundering, but circumstances offered him no choice. If his warriors were to continue fighting, they needed supplies. They had to move swiftly, the attack on the column fixing the Raven Guard in one place. Korax wanted to be many kilometers away before any more forces arrived in the area.
Survival was the key. Strike and withdraw and live to strike again. This gross betrayal would not go unnoticed. The Emperor would learn of what had befallen his legions at Istvan, and his retribution would be swift. Of that Korax was sure. He was determined that his warriors would live long enough to see it.
This is insubordination!
The Prefector could not help but shrink away from the intimidating bulk of the Astartes commander. He hated himself for showing such weakness. It was an affront to the uniform he wore. He was a loyal officer of the Emperor, not some tutor yard weakling. Yet the Prefector's protests died in his throat as Bran's tirade continued. The commander paced across his private chambers where the walls were hung with paintings depicting idealized scenes from the liberation of Deliverance. Lord Korax featured in all of them.
It is precisely because of this idiocy, that command of the Imperial Army was given to the Astartes. A few dreams and you're ready to head straight into a highly volatile war zone. Do you really think that Korax wants your regiment hanging around? Something else for him to worry about? Leave aside the nonsense of these dreams and consider this. If what you say is true, what difference will one regiment make? Horus's forces are Astartes. If the whole might of the Raven Guard, not to mention six more legions, are not enough to quell Horus's rebellion, what can your troops achieve?
At this, Valerius smarted, and he stepped forward, fist raised.
We'd actually be there. No, we are not Astartes. We are not the Emperor's favored. We are simply men. Men that believe in the Imperial truth, in the forging of this new empire, every bit as much as you. Men are weak.
Valerius exploded with rage, his frayed psyche finally giving vent.
It is not a normal man that leads this rebellion. Horus is an Astartes, one of yours. The best of you, if that is to be believed anymore. Be careful what you say next, Valerius.
Bran balled his fists by his sides.
It is not wise to stand in judgment of your betters.
Valerius was shocked, speechless. He turned and stalked a few paces away from Bran, quivering with indignation. He had no argument that would sway the Space Marine. In a way, the commander was correct. His Astartes were far superior to Valerius and his warriors. They were created by the Emperor to be physically greater than any mortal human. Their armor was superior. Their weapons, the best that the Mechanicum could create. But that was all that they were. Soldiers, warbringers, conquerors. Valerius calmed himself before turning back to Bran. He was about to offer a conciliatory gesture when Bran suddenly looked at Valerius with narrowed eyes. The Space Marine's whole body tensed, and for a moment Valerius was filled with an animal fear, that of a prey seeing the predator ready to pounce.
Perhaps there is some other reason you are so eager to travel to Istvan with all of your warriors. Maybe it is not to Lord Korax's aid that you would go, but to the rebels.
Valerius was horrified at the suggestion, but Bran continued before he could offer any argument.
Perhaps you think you are too good to serve under the Astartes. Is that it? Perhaps your dreams are a result of tortured pride, a symptom of a badly bruised ego. Maybe you feel that you would be better off serving Horus. My pride is in this uniform.
Valerius tugged at the sash across his chest.
You know why I wear the red. My father gave his blood for the Emperor. He fought and died beside the Astartes when they came to Therion. This is a badge of my family's dedication to the Emperor. A sign of the Emperor's trust in my family. It means as much to me as that sigil upon your tabard. Do not dare to suppose that I would besmirch this honor!
Bran was taken aback by Valerius's passion. He blinked several times, as might a large dog when swiped across the nose by a feisty young pup.
The weakness of men. Yes, the Astartes united terror and conquered the galaxy. Behind their guns and swords, we forged across the stars and claimed many thousands of worlds for the Emperor. You created the Imperium, of that I'm sure. But without us weak, frail men, what would you be? Who pilots the ships that carry you? Who grows the crops that feed you? Makes the weapons you wield and raises the children that will be your future generations? Not the Astartes.
Bran's hesitation lasted only a moment, and his scowl returned.
This is not a debate, Prefector. Were you a pilot, a farmer, a tech priest, or a father, you could say such things. You are not. You are an officer of the Imperial Army, and you answer to the Astartes. I am ranking commander on Deliverance, and I order you to stand down your regiment. You may not leave for Istvan. You are not welcome there.
Exhaustion threatened to overwhelm Valerius. He straightened and took a deep breath, thinking the unthinkable. The Prefector steadied himself and looked Bran directly in the eye.
And if I choose to go anyway?
Bran's stare was hard and uncompromising.
Deliverance has many orbital weapons.
Korax headed towards the Urgal Hills, swiftly covering the kilometers with easy strides at a pace he could sustain for many days. He avoided the open plains and kept to the ridgelines and valleys, never exposing himself upon a horizon, circling around the remnants of villages and towns. It had been 30 days since the drop, and in that time there had been no word from either the Salamanders or Iron Hands. Comms broadcasts would have been too risky, so Korax made the decision to strike out on his own to see if he could make contact with the other Loyalist legions. He'd left orders with his surviving troops to rendezvous at the Lurgan Ridge as soon as the weather broke. For 30 days he had asked himself why this had happened, and wondered how Horus had turned so many to his cause. It didn't matter how Horus had created this revolt. The pressing matter was that the War Master had. If an effective counterstrike was to be made, those that remained loyal to the Emperor had to come together. If they remained divided, they would be picked off, one legion at a time. The Primarch occupied himself with thoughts of strategy, recalling everything about the topography and landscape of Istvan V. He mentally overlaid the map with the forces of the legions ranged against him, estimating their strengths, where they would be disposed, and where there would be gaps in their defenses. As dawn broke, the Primarch reached Tor Vengis, a mount that overlooked the drop site where so many of his warriors had been slain. From this vantage point, he looked out across the Urgal Hills. Huge dropships dominated the landscape, blazoned with the liveries of the traitors. Sons of Horus, Iron Warriors, World Eaters, Emperor's Children, Death Guard, Alpha Legion, even the Word Bearers. Korax's heart fell at the sight. So many had turned. It seemed impossible that those who only months before had fought valiantly alongside the Raven Guard were now hunting them down. Despite his earlier thoughts on the futility of understanding their treachery, Korax could not fight the urge to find out more.